Welcome to the Scent Relief Podcast, where our goal is to equip every church to serve its community with gospel-centered mercy and compassion ministry.
Hi, I'm Greg Tiefertiller, Marketing Director for Scent Relief, and welcome to this special series of podcasts as we recognize the month of May as Foster Care Awareness Month. Foster care is a complex issue, and we know that not everyone has the same understanding or awareness of the issues that face our nation. It's complex, it's messy, but unfortunately, we often overlook the issue. So we've partnered with some close friends, experts in foster care, to share insights and experiences and to provide practical instructions on how to share the love of Jesus with children and families who are waiting for you. Whether you're a pastor, ministry leader, or a follower of Jesus, this is for you. And now, today's conversation. Welcome to today's podcast. Thank you for joining us. I'm privileged to be with two friends who reunited in the lobby a little while ago as if they hadn't seen each other in 20 years. Rick Morton, who's the Vice President of Engagement for Lifeline Children's Ministries, where he is shepherding the outreach to individuals, churches, ministry partners, and publishing resources, a best-selling author of Orphanology. If you have any awareness of what happens in the world of child welfare and foster care and adoption, you probably know Orphanology. And thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And beside him is Riley Green, Senior Director of Windshape Homes, which is one of the six ministries of the Windshape Foundation. And most people know Windshape and its correlation to Chick-fil-A and Truett Cathy and many years of focus from Truett and Jeanette on child welfare and the long-term focus on not just children, but families, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So thanks for being with us, Riley.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be with Rick.
Absolutely. This is fun. We, you know, are in the same town, and we never see each other, so we had to come here to hang out.
All the way to Georgia.
Absolutely. Yeah. But always excited to do this with a good friend.
Yeah, I feel very inferior in this room because there's so much experience sitting across from me, and you guys, I'm so glad you're here to invest in this conversation about foster care and some of the common perceptions that exist within foster care and the emphasis of a ministry in the church. You know, we know statistically and that there's well over 400,000 children in foster care at any given point in time. And that number, unfortunately, is trending upward. I think in today's civilized society, you would think that the numbers would be something that we could address and we could be very focused on and that we could make a dent in what's happening. But the trend doesn't say that, does it?
Not at all. And I think, you know, we're seeing that that 400,000 probably represents more like 600,000 kids when that's you right. consider the number of kids that are churning in and out of the system. And that's remained pretty static for a long time. And so we know that there's great room for the church to work and great opportunity. But that's a number we want to see get to zero. Right.
Yeah. I like to say to some people, Riley, it's we'd love to work families out of a job. It's a challenge and homes for that matter.
And one of the cool things that's happening, even though that number has gone up and then it comes down, we are seeing great activity in the church. The church is stepping up. There is a trend toward the church getting more involved, which is really exciting.
That is exciting. It's exactly why we're having this conversation.
Yes.
But there are some common perceptions around foster care and the role that the church can play. And there is no doubt we still need more families. We need the culture of the church to come alongside those families and support what those families are committed to. It is messy. That's going to be a word that we will talk about and probably is used as a common adjective for foster care across the board. I'm sure you guys use it every day. So there's some, again, common understanding. We need more families because the need is great. In fact, I heard not too long ago, someone said to me, yes, there's 400 and some odd thousand children in foster care, and there's probably another million to million and a half that should be. The dynamics of child welfare are much more complicated than what we even see in the statistics related to foster care in general. And so the needs are great. And I think what it presents to us, if there is a million or another million and a half, if there is another million or million and a half children, that's a million and a half to 2 million children that in some way, shape, or form are in families that are broken. And our culture is designed to navigate around the messy, right? Our culture is not, as Jesus went into Samaria, people said, why are you going there? You know, that's not where you go. And that is that. So that's not a new cultural phenomenon that has existed from Jesus's ministry and before, that going into the ugly places is not a norm for us. But all churches might not be prepared or equipped to step into the complex nature of foster care when it comes to inviting children into homes and raising up new foster families. But there are other ways that the church can be involved in foster care. And that's exciting because it really, frankly, it creates no excuse for us that there are opportunities and relationships that we can build in the complexity of the whole ecosystem of foster care. So let's talk about those, a couple of those today. Let's talk specifically about the state and the relationship with the state. You have in every state a different dynamic, but you have what's commonly referred to in most of our states, the Department of Family Children Services, or DFACS, or some acronym. But we have these state relationships, Riley, and a lot of people are scared about what that means to step into that. What is the role of the state, or what can be the role of the state in the way that the church interacts with them?
Well, the state is the licensing authority for organizations like ours, organizations like yours, Rick, and we're licensed by them to place children in homes. They set the rules, they set the minimum standards and that kind of thing. A lot of people look at that and get afraid. We're not necessarily afraid of that at all. Matter of fact, we're pretty trained to work with that. The state provides training processes and impact classes, and they also provide the children. They're the ones authorized to remove kids from homes, and then they need to place those kids in someone's home. And so that's where we come in and hope to provide a safe home, a Christian home, in order to place those children.
Is the state going to step into my house? Are they going to step into my family?
Well, yes, they can. Mm-hmm. But that's where organizations like ours and Lifeline want to sometimes create a buffer for them to shoulder some of that burden that the state does place on a foster parent. And you can be licensed by the state and work directly with the state as foster parents. And that's great. And a lot of our churches have people in their congregations that are already doing that.
And I think we see a lot of opportunity at this point for people to engage in the system missionally, going directly to work with the state.
Yeah.
And so it's a great way for the church to have another outlet into the community for the gospel.
Yep. Yes.
I think, you know, sometimes we talk about this relationship between the church and the state, and we forget that the reason the state is doing child welfare ultimately is because at some point we as the church didn't. Hmm. And so they've stepped in, and the state is going to do what the state does. And so it's creating policy and creating regulations and standardizing and all of those sorts of things. But there are ways for us to engage and kind of find those soft spots and failure points and difficulties to put ourselves back into the system. We're never going to see the day again where the state isn't involved, right?
Right, right.
But what we can do is step into places where we don't really create that, you know, almost like that chafing point between us and the state. There are meaningful, great ways that the church can step in and work and be really invited in as a welcome partner by the state.
Yeah, let's talk about what the state doesn't do for a minute, because as much as they are a regulatory organization, they are there to facilitate a process. Talk about what the state doesn't do.
The state doesn't care for children. Right. And so ultimately, in providing care and providing, good homes, healthy situations for kids that are in care, the state can try to create all the conditions and can regulate the process. But ultimately, it takes real life families doing, mm-hmm. Real life on life. Engagement with kids, and that's where the church has an incredible advantage, because because we're already there. We're already a community stakeholder. We're present, and it's not about extending or us getting out of our lane. It's just about us, you know, really engaging a need in our community through some things that we're doing where we're just trying to maintain fidelity to the policies that the state's created.
And the other neat thing is that the church provides such an incredible community of care. Mm-hmm. And I know you and you know me. And when you walk into church Sunday and you have another child with you, then I'm attracted to that. And I can come alongside you and say, how can I help?
Frankly, I don't know how people do it without the community of the church.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you have within the state, the people that you interact with the most being the caseworkers or the social workers. It's a ministry opportunity, right? Mm-hmm.
It certainly is. And I know we often see caseworkers that are with the state have caseloads way over 30 children, and that's very difficult to manage. And so they're already tense. They're already stressed. Mm. And so we love the opportunity to minister to them. I know a term that was used recently that I heard was pain point. That is a pain point for a caseworker with the state. And if we can come alongside them and take some of that burden off of them, that just frees them up. And they are attracted to that. They like that. And so I enjoy watching that take place.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. They're the enemy most of the time.
Yeah,
in this situation,
right?
But truly, they're not.
No.
You know, they're a productive part of the solution. And but everyone kind of holds them at arm's length. Mm-hmm. When the church really reaches out in winsome ways, you know, like I think back to an incident that after the tornadoes in Tuscaloosa and through North Alabama, we had a church partner that reached out to caseworkers in that area and said, what can we do to help your family? And immediately the caseworkers went to the idea of what could happen to help the families that they had on their caseload. And when they realized that the church was asking not how do we help families on your caseload, but how do we help your family? Mm. How do we deal with your loss? There was this immediate kind of really a connection point for the church with those workers because they're not used to somebody going out of their way to bless them.
Exactly. Wow. And one of the things that we try to do and we encourage all Christ followers to do in the church when they step into foster care is to love that child with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. You know, just I am all into this, and let the love for that child that we're displaying, that distinctiveness, just ooze over into that caseworker with the state. Mm-hmm. And they see that. Mm. And that is exactly what you were saying earlier, that they're not seeing from a lot of those caseworkers at the state.
Absolutely. And what it does is ultimately it serves to put a face on the gospel.
Yes.
And to bring a reality of who Jesus is into the lives of many of those caseworkers. And it causes them to begin to question, you know, what Christ has for them.
And Greg, one more thing. Several things Rick said I resonate with so well. The state's budgets are tight, and they operate on a whole lot less than what a lot of people think as far as operations and efficiencies and their systems. I recently talked with a social worker here in the state of Georgia, and their Wi-Fi had been disconnected because of budgeting. And so the DFACS director of that county told me that they'd like to meet in a bigger room with everyone there and look at the case files of each of the children, but they can't do that because the Wi-Fi wasn't there. So they have to be in different locations, and that creates a lot of consternation.
Wow.
And that's sad.
It's fundamental tough things that we take for granted that most of us can sit around a conference table where we can have collaboration and so on, and they lose the fundamental ability to sit there and do that effectively or efficiently. And so providing Wi-Fi, I think taking a MiFi card, you know, into a DFACS office so that social workers can collaborate. That's Very practical. Hey, church, I think you can probably pick up the MiFi charges on a month-to-month basis, right, just to make that possible.
Right.
Maybe you've got some other examples of that.
Yeah, and even the way God uses this to open other doors. I mean, you know, Riley and I share through Birmingham a story of one of our local church partners that went in and painted the child welfare office and just tried to make the space that they were working in more hospitable and, you know, a good place to work. And like, man, that added credibility, not just for their church, but for others. Mm. I remember sitting in a meeting that was pretty tense, to be honest with you, where we were talking about a church being able to serve families who have lost their kids into the system. And there was kind of some skepticism about the church stepping into that role. The thing that really kind of tipped it was the director of that office all of a sudden realized that the people that were there from the church were people that had been coming and bringing lunch and desserts and ministering and praying for people in their office. Mm-hmm. And it was almost as if when she had that realization that you just watched the skepticism just kind of melt away. And it was like, these people aren't strangers. They're not. These are people that have been trying to be our friends for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen is that the Lord uses those very simple things in just incredibly providential ways to give the church a foothold.
Yeah, you know, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber, who are the hosts of our Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, talk about a situation where they went into a DFACS office. And again, the question, what do you need? They walked in, they asked that question. I'm giving the short story, of course, to this the answer, but the answer was storage. And everyone said, storage? Again, back to, you know, again, we'll be surprised by the answer inevitably. And you walk in, you ask the question, they say storage. And they said, well, help us understand, what's the situation? And they said, well, you know, a child's taken in out of a home, middle of the night, everything goes into the garbage bag.
Right.
And what do they not have? It's all the things that they don't have. And sometimes that isn't the issue. You mentioned backpacks. You know, if they have backpacks in the basement, already have those in storage. They have items. They don't have a place to put them. Mm. And that was the case. And they said, we don't have any place to put these things. We can get the supplies. We just don't have a place for it. And so they got creative, went back to their local church. Local church rented a pod, you know, one of the storage units, put it in there and then handed the keys to the social workers. And the church stocks that pod with duffel bags filled with essential items. So again, handed the keys to the social workers and said, 24/7, this is yours.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
And setting them up to be the hero, setting them up to be, you know, the ones who are able to serve well. The church doesn't have to get notoriety or recognition. We it's probably best when we don't.
Yeah,
absolutely. It just, again, practical ways that the church can meet the need, which in essence builds relationships for the purpose of the gospel, exemplifying and sharing the gospel. You know, I think often we are really good as Christians and as the church sometimes to draw our own conclusions or to honestly set an agenda. We step into this place of messiness, this step of what we think is ministry opportunity, and the question we forget to ask often is, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that, Riley, that's a great example. If you were to step into that DFACS office and ask them that question, you would get an answer very different than what you had ever perceived when you walked in there. You would have thought, I don't know what we would think, right? But you certainly wouldn't think that they would look at you and go, you know, Wi-Fi is one of our biggest challenges, right?
I heard recently that there was a DFACS director who made a comment to a church and said, we have a basement full of backpacks. And it was basically just kind of being responsive to the idea that the church doesn't need to try to think for child welfare officials. We need to ask them what they need.
That's right.
And then find those places where they lack, find those places where they're under-resourced, and then rush to that. So if they need backpacks, we want to give them, right?
Absolutely.
But if they don't, we don't want to try to think for them.
That's right. Yeah. And there are some other practical ways, simple ways. When you show up in the DFACS office with cupcakes, right, or exactly, a meal, or you just to offer them something very basic to lighten that load. You mentioned, mm-hmm, the stress load that they're under and the weight that they carry, and the other, you know, not just the numbers, but the emotional stress and the emotional baggage that comes with some of these cases. They're complex. They're there's nothing pretty about it. I mean, or we wouldn't be talking about it in general. So it's something that they have to carry. And we as the church have an incredible opportunity to step into their lives. I love what you said a minute ago, too. It's not just about them. It's about their family, how this weight, you know, we know, and maybe not everyone knows that a common picture of a situation of foster care is a middle of the night situation where there's something that happens in the home. And that social worker is called to walk into that home, has 5 or 10 minutes with a garbage bag to throw as much of that child's those meaningful possessions into that bag and get out with that child. And that is a heavy weight to carry.
Yes, and that happens often. And many times there's not a foster home available at midnight or at 2 a.m. to place that child. So that caseworker is responsible all night for that child. So they're either going back to the office and trying to find a placement or, you know, a cot in the office. That's known to happen many times, or a hotel. Right. Somewhere.
Absolutely.
And so, I think our ability to speak into the system, honestly, we've talked maybe in days gone by in evangelism about like earning the right to be heard. Mm-hmm. That's in fact what we're doing in many cases is we want to care for folks genuinely. We want to meet needs that are real needs because we love caseworkers and we love people that are in the system. But we're also finding ways that we're earning the right to be heard about our involvement in the system and ultimately our ability to bring the gospel to bear in some of the dark corners in the system that we may not easily have access to.
Mm. Yeah, it's a powerful opportunity.
And I think many times we assume or we begin with a mindset of, and you can correct me here, Rick, not hostility, but there's a tension that's just built into thinking that the state is going to just be hard and difficult and they're out to get us kind of thing. And that's just not true. We have great respect for the state. We have a great relationship with the state. We want to maintain that. And it, to me, is so fertile, like you were talking about, for ministry opportunities and showing the distinctiveness of who we are in Christ.
You know, and I think one of the things we've seen along the way with the state is to be able to affirm them and say, we don't think the things that you're bringing to the table are bad. Mm. That the things that you're bringing to bear are hugely important in the lives of children, in the lives of the families that those kids come from. But also we need to then, it gives us the opportunity to be honest with them as well to say, but we also believe that fundamentally many of the things that you're bringing to bear aren't really reaching their full potential because they're being applied to an untransformed life. Hmm. And that the church bears in the gospel a life-changing message. We have the hope for the world. We have the hope for the transformation of lives so that the things that the state's bringing to bear in trying to see real lasting change happen in the lives of these families, that it can begin to take root in fertile soil because people have been made over by Christ.
Yeah, and let's just think fundamentally for a second. Let's just not forget that we can pray.
Yeah.
If you walk into an office and you just ask, how can we pray for you? It's an incredible bridge. In building that relationship and a relationship over time, nothing that's automatic, nothing that's immediate. You're building trust. There's collaboration. There's cooperation that can be formed over time. And the state is one where you're absolutely right. Sometimes it's we feel like they're the enemy, and the reality is their needs are just as great, and there are real people that are operating within the confines of their role and responsibility. They're trying to do something good. They're doing something right. But there's an opportunity to come alongside and be part of something greater than just meeting that physical need in that time of crisis. And it is a time of crisis. So everyone in the process is carrying the weight of that crisis. I want to talk about another group of people that is sometimes overlooked in the conversation, and that's the biological family. Again, I think a lot of our conversation is there's a need. There's a child, we need a family, and there's no doubt that that is core to the response. But we often forget that the ultimate goal, Rick, is what?
It's to see a child reunified with their biological family. You know, and quite honestly, that's one of those things that that sometimes we have missed in the church. We center on the child and on a safe and healthy environment for the child, but don't sometimes really share the state's mission to try to see that child be reunified with their biological family. The truth is that for us, this has become really a theological revolution as much as it has a practical revolution. You know, if we really take 2 Corinthians 5 seriously, if we really believe that we've been called into the ministry of reconciliation, that the gospel has the power to put broken things back together, and that Christ has called us to be ambassadors of that, then, like, I think it's our role then to figure out how to bring the gospel to bear in the lives of those birth families as well. And if there's ever going to be hope of reunification, what we know is that those families, their greatest need most of the time is Christ. It's not the symptoms that we're treating, but it's the ultimate, you know, the ultimate ill. And so when the church comes to bear, we really can help along the agenda of kids going back into the system. And, you know, you talked earlier about that idea of 600,000 children a year churning in and out through the system. Well, if we effectively want to make a dent in foster care in America, let's turn it off at the spigot, right? Like, let's stop kids from getting into the system by caring for families and doing work with families beforehand, or intercepting families when their kids are first brought into the system or they're in danger of being brought into the system, so that we can then see those families reunified and the kids don't come back.
Absolutely. Riley, what are some practical ways that the church can invest in those birth families to build them up and to practically equip them for the idea of reunification? If ultimately there is a reconciled relationship, what are some practical things the church can do to make that possible?
Well, there are several things the church can do to help with that. And I think of, like, vacation Bible schools. You can invite a birth parent to one of those ceremonies and let them see their child participating in that. Mm. And that's after a child's placed. A church can also provide parenting classes, skills, managing money, things like that, because a lot of times these birth mothers, the biological mom, she doesn't have the resources, she doesn't have the knowledge, and many reasons that's why a child's taken out of that home. Mm-hmm. And if a church knows someone who could hire that person, they need a job. Mm-hmm. So those are practical things we could do. I know that something that was said a second ago, when Yvonne and I were foster parents, we're not foster parents right now, but when we were in those case plan meetings with the biological parents, we had opportunities when the guardian ad litem was out of the room, or the judge, or whatever the case may be, to talk to those moms and dads and to reassure them that our goal is reunification with them, but also encouraging them, you've got to do this plan. You've got to work on this. This is real. This is what's going to happen to your two little girls if this doesn't take place. So this is serious stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we've done at Lifeline is we actually have begun a program called Families Count, which is helping churches to step into this place of ministering to birth families. And what we're doing is helping churches partner with the state to teach family education courses that are a part of a family's case plan. It's one of the things that they have to do in order to be reunified with their kids, but to offer biblically based, gospel-centered parenting classes that fit the state requirements, that do everything that the state mandates should happen through one of those parenting classes, but then to bring all of what the church has to bear in relationship and support and community, and in such a way that we begin community with these parents and really graft them into the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you made a good point. There are states now that if reunification is the end goal and the biological family wants their children back in the home, that there are steps they have to take in order to make that possible. And mm-hmm. talk about the state not being against you. They're actually creating policy that works for you as the church that says, wait a minute, they have to have this to reunify with their children, and that is their goal as well, we have an opportunity. It's an open door opportunity to provide that need.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I remember our, the church that we're a part of in Birmingham is doing this. We've done about 8 classes now over the course of about a year and a half. And I remember sitting down with our church leadership as we were first talking about this idea. And, you know, and I sort of got these very strange looks as I was telling them, like, the state will create an opportunity for these people to come and they'll come to our door. And it was like, wait a minute, you mean the people that we're already trying to reach in the community, the people that we're already struggling to try to have a relationship with, you mean like we're going to create an organic opportunity for those people to come to our door with an openness to learn and an openness to hear? And truly, that's what we've seen. Because these parents, you know, in so many cases, I think we draw caricatures of who they are.
Yes.
But they love their children.
Right.
They want to do well, but they don't know how. In many cases, they're under resourced. They don't have the productive community around them. And at the end of the day, many of them, the greatest lack that they have is that they are. They're trapped in the middle of their own sinfulness, in the middle of their own struggle. And the first thing that they need is the freedom that comes in knowing Christ and being forgiven, and then learning how to walk in a community of people that are walking that out.
Yes, surrounding them. Yeah, absolutely. Riley, you've mentioned to me not long ago that you know, churches of 300 or churches of 6,700, these are practical ways that the church can come alongside those families.
Yeah, the large churches, they have a lot more resources, obviously, that to jump into this arena. But even the churches of 300 can be practically involved. They can buy car seats for families. They can bring those gift cards to those families. They can go to the local DHR office or DFACS office and say, we want to paint your walls. Mm. We can bring lunch. There's so many different ways a church can be involved, even if it's a 50-member church.
Right.
A lot of these churches already have foster parents that are working along with the state. So many of the churches already have these people in their church, and it's creating that community of care for that family and looking beyond. A lot of the things Rick said are so correct as far as the opportunities that are there that the state is giving us.
And what a blessed opportunity for churches to do this together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Partner church to church.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because we realize the need's bigger than any church is going to meet in any community.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so it really gives an opportunity for, you know, local associations of churches and groupings to come together.
That's right.
And share the load.
And the challenge does exist in every community.
Yes.
It is a national conversation. It is not an isolated conversation. There really are no exceptions as to where the opportunity is.
We just met with the church the other day, last week, and there's like 115 children in care in that community.
Wow.
But if there's no additional foster parents in that community, they'll go outside of that county. They've got to find a placement for mm-hmm. that kid, but it's best to place them in the county in which they reside, mm-hmm. if possible.
Mm-hmm. Because it is such a widespread challenge, and it is such an incredible opportunity, that there is an open door for every church in America to be part of this conversation. And again, I think today the conversation, the focus of this, this conversation is to realize that there are multiple ways to get involved, and the obstacles of raising up more foster families, or the challenge that comes with that, is one that is real, and it is one we should be focused on. We should be training. We should be developing a culture. We should develop a focus on the needs of those children. But in the process of doing that, and what might create or begin to catalyze that culture within the church, is reaching out beyond just the child and just the foster family, but realizing that there are other touch points, and start something somewhere. The common statement is, we're not all called to be foster parents, but we're all called to do something.
Yeah.
And God has equipped us for that opportunity as a local church. I love the idea of church-to-church partnerships. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that we can come alongside one another and make a huge impact on the lives of these families. You know, when we talk about this, and if we were talking directly to a pastor, if we're talking to a church leader, Rick, what would you tell them as far as where to get started?
I think that realizing that there are opportunities for everyone in the church to do something, and just reassuring pastors that I think many times we have a fear that jumping into this kind of ministry is going to lead us away from our mission, and it's going to take us farther from the gospel and from gospel proclamation. But the truth is, this leads us right into it, into people that have an obvious need for Christ, and that when we begin to get in and serve them, and when we begin to become a part of their lives, we get a door that's wide open to begin to share the good news with them, and to invite them to life in Christ.
Amen. Yeah.
Let's not miss the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
You know, let's make sure that we see all that's happening in the lives of these children, the lives of the families that are impacted, because all of those create opportunities. And we want to encourage you to connect with the local DFACS office in your state, build those relationships with state social workers, those caseworkers. They need your encouragement. They need to be uplifted. And again, some of them need Christ. And so there are evangelistic opportunities in those relationships. And then, wow, we talk about the preventative nature of this. I think it would be great if we could work these people out of a job. Yeah. What if the church really stepped into that role and committed to the idea of investing in families in a preventative nature, and building healthy homes where families and children can thrive. So we want to help you with that. We invite you to go to cinderleaf.org/fostercare, and you'll find some resources and information there that can help you get started. And like I said earlier, if you do nothing else, you can pray. That's a place where you can pray for the social worker. You can pray for the biological family. Naturally, you can pray for the child and the families that are caring, and pray for your church. Pray that God would lay it on your heart and create a clear vision and a pathway for your church to find its place as you're on mission and investing in the lives of these families.
Thank you for listening to the Send Relief Podcast, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast, visit our website at namb.net/sendrelief.